Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 345 of Mike White's podcast. I'm Jack, as always, joined by Casey.
Noah.
How's things, mate?
Yeah, not bad, you?
Yeah, all good. Weird time for us to both, pardon me, have a bit of a gap, but I suppose it's nice for it to not be so rushed that one of us is having to sprint out the door. We'll just get straight into it. Leeds drew 1-1 at Everton on Monday night, and before the game, I would have said, a really good point. And after the game, I felt a tinge disappointed.
Yeah, I think that's one of those things that I think when you're expecting to be sort of at the bottom end of the table like we are, I feel like it's one of those things that it's going to happen quite a lot, in as much as you can map out the games and you can look at them and say individually, you know, a point from this would be good. But obviously, certainly the first half, we had the chances to probably get another goal or two, which could have made it a different contest. But yeah, like you say, you do just try to look at it as, no, it's a way at a mid-table Premier League team. A point is a decent result.
Yeah, I mean, Everton were sort of on top for about 3-4 minutes at the start, and then they didn't have a kick until second half, really. I was amazed at quite how dominant we were able to be. Them playing their sort of 4-2-3-1, we just got on top of it and then never came back. I thought that we seemed to have loads of space. Their centre-halves didn't seem to be able to get near Calvert-Lewin. There was just so much room for us, and when we got the ball, we seemed to use it really well.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we'd sort of been trying to figure out as well was how the back five was going to line up. Goodmanson not making it, so James goes across to left back. Yeah. And then Bornau plays as the centre of the three centre backs.
Yeah, because we really weren't sure which way round Roden and Bornau would be, were we?
No, I was a little bit surprised by it, but I suppose the Roden does seem to have got into that role as the right centre back of pushing up, and I thought we had a lot of joy down that right hand side throughout that first half.
Yeah, I mean, we had already been plenty on top when the goal came, but it was down that right hand side, and it was sort of Roden pushing up to get involved and win that challenge in the air, wasn't it? Which I think sort of came off his shoulder. It was a bit messy, but he won the ball clean enough. We break down the right, and it was one of the few times that I think one of the central players properly managed to get into some space out wide, with Stack running out there. Puts a good ball across. It looked for all the world that Aronson was going to keep trying to chase it and get there himself, but luckily he did eventually leave it. And James Justin finishes really well.
Yeah, it was a really nicely worked goal. Kind of like you say, from that point that Joe Roden shoulders it down the line. And then, is it Stack and Bogle, is it, that link up there?
Yeah, Stack and Bogle.
But yeah, good ball across. And as you say, the panic, I think, is that Brendan Aronson is going to chase it down up until he's just completely in James Justin's way, but it clearly gets the shout. It's a nice, calm finish from Justin.
Yeah. And getting the lead, it's a deserved lead. And for ones we didn't just sit either, we carried on for the rest of the half. We were still looking the better side. I actually can't remember who puts the cross in. Was it Bogle's cross for Calvert-Lewin for the chance, for what is the big chance?
Honestly, I can't remember who puts the cross in either. But it's a great ball in, and it's one of those where you just think like half an inch, and it's probably 2-0.
Yeah, because he's cut. It's not like, oh, he's scuffed it a bit or something like that. He's hit it as clean as you could hope to. Just smashed it straight against the post.
Yeah, the like Pickford's completely beaten by it. It's really unlucky. It's the sort of thing that was happening to him quite early on in the season. Was those sort of chances, where stuff like that was happening. So. Yeah, it's one of those. I think from that range, obviously, if he had it back again, I think he'd back himself to score. But it's one of those things, isn't it?
Yeah. So we're going at half time 1-0 up. Everyone's really pleased. And that's when sort of the interesting stuff in the game really happens. Because they at half time, they take off Harrison Armstrong for Jared Branthwaite, take off McNeil for Dewsbury Hall, and go to a back five and sort of matches up a bit. And they're pretty much immediately on top in the second half. They look much better. Calvert-Lewin, as good as he is at challenging for things and getting us up the pitch, he was already doing great to be winning a battle against O'Brien and not Branthwaite, Tarkowski. One on three was a bit too much. And, Farke has a ton of credit in the bank at the minute. No one's getting really but this is the thing that we've been saying about him the entire time, his management, his in-game choices. I think within the first 10 minutes of that half, you know that you either need to switch to a back four to get an extra midfielder in and try and be able to keep hold of the ball in the middle, or you go to a proper 5-3-2 and you have two big lads up front to go against their three. And then you've got out ball and you still be able to win the ball in the way in the first half because you've got two going up against three instead of one. And we just spent the entire time in that half. We were in the pub and everyone's saying this needs changes. You open Twitter, everyone's saying this needs changes. And like he does Tanaka for Gruev in the 66th minute, which was basically to play the same role. And to be fair, I don't think Tanaka had a great day when he came on. But that goal is the 76th minute. It's been happening for 30 minutes by the time he does it. And the changes come in the 85th minute.
Yeah, it was very Neil Warnock, in as much as I'm going to wait till we concede the goal and then we'll lump on a load of subs with 5 minutes to go. Like you say, for all like Brendan Aaronson, I think it's worth saying, had an excellent first half.
Yeah, he was really good first half.
But in the second half, he seemed to end up being dragged out and becoming a nominal second left back. And so you just had no one near Calvert-Lewin the few times we did get the ball up the pitch. And we just struggled throughout it. So like you say, the thought went through, do you bring Metcher off, get two people up there who can hold the ball up together?
I think that's the way I'd have gone. I think I would have gone Metcher and Calvert-Lewin up top. But I can also see the argument for the switch into a four. So you've got an extra body in midfield and you can just keep the ball by passing.
Yeah, I think I probably would have gone with the two big men as well, but like you say, I think there's any way you could have played it. One thing I did find interesting about Everton that is that in this, obviously they had Armstrong starting as 10 and Ajayi on the left to start with, and in the second half with McNeil coming off, they nominally just had Ajayi just playing wherever he felt like. Yeah, the and then you sort of between him and Dewsbury Hall, who just seemed the two of them just kept popping up places.
The number of times they played a ball into feet at Dewsbury Hall, and I went out, and I just kept thinking, how does he have 10 yards in every direction again?
Yeah, it was, and that's from like they. It was a weird shape they ended up with because obviously, like you say, they've gone three central defenders. One the right back's built like a centre back as well. But then you've still got your two holding mids on there. You've got Dewsbury Hall. You've got Ajayi. So you had this team that defensively, you essentially had four or five at the back at any time, and then
And
you had.
it's worth mentioning that before the goal actually happens, Nathan Patterson goes off for Tyler Dibbling. So they push even more at that stage when you'd think they'd be really susceptible to being counted on and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I know there's not been a lot of good come out about Tyler Dibley. I know he's not played a lot of football recently, but I thought he was, I think he was as effective as he needed to be in that game at that time. But you had this midfield structure that just could sort of float around and had a bit of freedom. So yes, we did have sort of the numbers defensively, but there was just no out ball for us for such a period.
Yeah, and you can't just... We're not good enough to just sit back and defend the whole time. We are miles better defensively than I ever thought we would be this season. But, you know, against basically any Premier League team, if you just sit back, they're going to have enough quality to do something at some point. And as eventually they managed to work an opening, it's interesting, like, we obviously ended up with Stack pushing out to the right, and that's how he ends up with so much space. For them, it's that Idrissa Gueye ends up pushing out to the right. Tanaka tries to get there, but to be honest, it's one of them where, given the numbers we had, it feels like it should have been someone took him off Tanaka.
Hmm.
Rather than Tanaka being the one trying to chase across. It's a pretty good ball in, and then it depends on your persuasion. It's either really good movement by Tierno Barry to get in front of Bornau, or it's a bit slow by Bornau to let him get in front. And I think that the truth is probably somewhere in between.
Yeah, I thought at the time, I don't know whether I'd go so far as to call it a bit heavy-legged from Bornau. You know, that I'm willing to give him that he's still not played a lot of football, and has also had a bit of a knock, you know, in the last few weeks. It's exactly the sort of run you want to see your centre forward making in that position. Yeah. There, just getting across the centre back. And the only thing you'd say is if it was so easy to stop, the players wouldn't do it. But it's a good run.
Yeah, I do. Like, gun to my head, I think if Roden is the central centre back, I think he probably manages to cover that. But that is really, that's a hypothetical, and I'm definitely not slagging off Bornau and saying, oh, he's, you know, he's shit, he should be nowhere near the team, or like that. I just think he got caught slightly on his heels.
Yeah, I think for me, the disappointing part of it was that he gets back goal side. Mm. Like, you see him get in the position, and then...
Yeah,
like
the starting position is good.
Yeah, it's just that split second that does him, and Darlow has absolutely no chance with the shot. It's no. the power on it. It just takes it straight past him.
Even though it does go like straight over him, but you're going to be set low for a chance like that. There's no chance to react to that. Yeah, we've got Alan. We're going to say we have got the players for 3-5-2, but Farker will not play Nemecha, even though he's got best minutes per goal average. Like, if he wants free attackers so much, play 3-4-1-2, having some behind Calvert-Lewin and Metcher. There are times that I definitely would do that, especially when Goodmanson and Bogle are both fully fit and flying. I think that there's a lot to be said for that. I that's the sort of thing I think I would have gone to in this game.
Yeah, I think one of the things that annoys me a little bit, and we have spoken about it before, is that I wouldn't mind Farker not going with the two big lads up top, but he has done previously and it's worked well, where he's played them both centrally. So it's not as if he hasn't seen it. It's this odd thing of that, you know, we saw it at Man City and we saw it in, you know, for periods in the games following that. And then he just doesn't seem to have thought about revisiting it. You know, we spoke about it in the Scum game. It probably would have been an ideal time to do that. But whereas he's looked more to use Metcher on the left, which I don't think especially suits him. But, you know, it's something I would like us to use a bit more of, that, you know, when we're under the cosh, just give us that out ball, just get a couple of bodies there that can hold the ball and allow, you know, Stack and Bogle to get up there a bit.
Yeah. Other things that I've seen people saying elsewhere that I think are worth bringing up. Was Tanaka for Gruev the wrong sub, and should it have been Longstaff? I think in hindsight, I definitely agree with that. But at the time, I think I'd have been fine with either, so I'd be lying if I was complaining about it.
I think when you look at it, the idea is, do we bring Tanaka on and it gives us a bit more forward momentum? Which in theory, yes, he is a more attack-minded player, but I do think that relies on you having more possession than you were, which I didn't see that change making that difference. So I think Longstaff was the one I was probably leaning more towards, just because I think he's more defensively minded than Tanaka is. But like I say, I don't think there's a massive amount in it.
No. And then sort of in a way that kind of proved the people that were arguing for the 4-2-3-1's point as the change, Aronson finally goes off in the 85th minute. Obviously, he'd been brilliant first half. He was not good second half. He also looked exhausted for like the last 20 minutes that he was on the pitch. So I don't know how this sub took that long. But Longstaff comes on for Stark, Okafor for Aronson, and crucially, Buonanotte we finally get to see 10 minutes out of for ball now. And I thought that the outside of, you know, getting a decent point away from home and the first half performance, even though it was only a little 10-minute cameo, I really liked what I saw out of Buonanotte.
I mean, I'm always a big fan of player is on the floor. Oh, the ball is near me. The powers of recovery. I mean, to be fair, I don't think it was a red card, but he did seem to get a decent forearm to the head. But yeah, there was something I quite liked about it. It's just realization that, oh, the ball's within 5 yards. Oh, I'm taking this now.
Yeah.
And I think he a nice little move, and he got the shot away, which was deflected by for a corner, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't know the exact stats, but it was something daft. Like Leeds didn't have a shot in the second half until about the 70th minute or something like that. It might have even been more than that. It might have been after they scored. We just offered nothing in the second half.
What was it? It was Brad and Fieldy who were in the pub watching it with us, that in the first half when they did the shot counters, described it as the worst game of Connect Four you'd ever seen, and then it suddenly flipped in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, I think Michael's right. Just said Fart by nature is a cautious manager, sets teams up to get at least a point, and he is right. And unfortunately, it's one of the things that, you know, Farker's doing great. I have to let him off, but this in-game management stuff does still wind me up.
It's the opposite. I was going to say, it's the opposite of the Partridge quote, isn't it? Daniel Farker, by his very nature, is very predictable.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's not a bad point. It could have been better, but it's not a bad point by any stretch. I mean, what are we now? Still 6 points clear?
Yeah, 6 points clear. A much better goal difference as well. I think that's the other thing that makes it feel a little bit worse, is that Burnley picked up a point, West Ham won, Bournemouth won. What did Forest do?
Forest won, didn't they? I'm trying to remember who again. Didn't they beat Brentford like 3-0 or 3-1?
Oh yeah, it was Brentford, and Brentford were at home as well.
Yeah,
which I found really frustrating. So I think it does feel a little bit worse for the teams around us all, you know, picking up points.
Yeah.
Because I think I said to you, like, on the day, like, that if you win that game, you get the satisfaction of the win, but you also just get to say, good, we are exactly where we were before this weekend started.
It is so weird, isn't it, that you can draw at Everton, and if everyone around you wins, that's worse than if you lost but everyone else did, in a sense.
Yeah. Yeah, like you say, the point is a good point. It takes us a point closer to where we need to be. We're still above. We stay above the point per game average.
Yeah, and we are only 2 points behind both Palace and Spurs. And the interesting thing that I was going to bring up: have you seen relegation odds?
No, so
like you can't even bet on Wolves.
Mm-hmm.
But fair. Wolves 6. Yeah, like, you know, Wolves are... Oh, these are offering them, actually. The one I was looking at didn't even have them. 365 have got them at 66 on. Burnley, 20 on. West Ham, 1-2. Forest, 6-1. Palace, 6-1. Leeds, 7s. So Palace have sort of, there's more people fancying Palace to go down than Leeds right now. So, which also, I will just say now, makes sense why we're spending 50 million on Jürgen van Larsen. I don't know if you saw that break an hour or two ago.
Yeah, I did see that. And it's once the news of Mateta going broke, it made all the sense in the world.
We said it on the last pod, but I think we said it earlier than that as well. I just don't know if it was on the internet when we said that.
Yeah. I mean, they had to sign someone because, the fact that you're going to have a transfer window where, as a Palace fan, you see your team bringing Brennan Johnson and Jørgen Strand Larsen, and you're going to look at it and think, this hasn't been a great transfer window for us. It's odd, but when you lose your best centre-back by a mile, your centre-forward decides he wants to leave, and your manager announces he's going at the end of the season. It looks all so poorly handled this last month or so from Palace.
I do think Palace, because as much as he's been a bit of a pain in the ass for them in the media and stuff, the way that he's talking, he is a good coach. I think that if he stays right end of the season, I think that they'll sort it out, and I do think they'll be okay. I hope they're not. I hope they don't win another game all season. Another team that, and any team that can end up below us, good. But
if they could win the Conference League, and then we'll just send Harry Gray on loan there next year to get a bit of European experience.
Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds like a plan. He scored over the weekend.
Oh, good.
He's Rotherham United's youngest ever goal scorer.
Nice.
Header from a short corner. Just got a bit of space at the near post. Good finish.
Well, they do make those grey boys a bit lanky. Yeah, good.
It was the best thumping header I've seen for Rotherham since whichever Chuckle Brother scores the own goal in that episode. That is Rotherham, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I don't know where to go from there. It's nice to know, and I'm being generous with this call, that it took him far fewer games to get his first professional goal than Archie's against Leicester. That is absolutely his goal.
Yeah, still his goal. It was really weird when they kept talking about him scoring his first senior goal for that Spurs game last month. And I was like, no, he's got one.
Yeah, Leicester. It's fine.
Alternative facts, mate. Alternative facts. But yeah, I think Strand Larsen to Palace happens. We thought that it would happen beforehand. I don't know if Leeds are going to sign anyone at all, but I think if we do, it's like one loan.
I think if the option's there, they'll bring in a loan fullback. And that's about it. I don't think there was ever... I mean, it's also in a January transfer window. There's never a lot of hope that you're going to throw out some money there. Now, the very cynical part of me looks and goes, did we put the bid in to look like we were looking for someone knowing full well we were never going to sign Strand Larsen, but they get the quote-unquote PR boost of...
I believe Twitter calls it We Tried FC.
Yeah. A classic Victor Otter move if ever there was one. We are in for this Dutch international.
Yeah. I think when they heard it might be like doable at sort of 35 plus add-ons, I think that they really were going to try and do it because they thought, no, that's good value and we can do it. And I think Wolves welcomed the bid as sort of a stalking horse. They were like, no, we'll accept it. We'll show that it's for sale, but we'll get more. And it sounds like this Palace bid is 45 million plus add-ons. Like 50 million, basically. And we're not paying that. For someone who... gun to your head right now, given the form, if we signed Jørgen Strand Larsen for like 45 million, he's shown he's reluctant to play two big lads. Is he dropping him? Is he dropping Calvert-Lewin? Because I don't think he is.
No. Should he? No, I was speaking to someone at work about this, where it's just like, well, yeah, like you say, he's not really leaned towards playing Calvert-Lewin and Metcher up top for any sustained number of games. Calvert-Lewin's in the best form he's been in for couple of years. So you keep him in the team. I know he was a free transfer, but I assume he's on very good wages.
Yeah.
And you're not, I can't see us paying that much to have him on the bench. And also, like, whilst I was a big fan of Strand Larsen last year, he had a very good season for Wolves. He's not done a whole lot since he's come back from this injury. And there is always that part of you, because you see it enough times, of just going, you know, is this a one-season wonder? Has he been figured out?
Yeah.
Aside from, Jesus, he's big. It could well be that 45-50 million is, especially for someone like Palace, is a lot of money for someone.
Yeah,
I might not hit the ground running.
Like, in the summer, I would have said, yeah, that's perfectly reasonable. But given the 6 months he's had since, it does sound a bit high to me. I haven't seen this myself. Leeds rumoured to be interested in Sterling. I dare say everyone's having a look now that he's been released. Everyone will look, but he's going somewhere that can pay bigger wages than us.
Yeah, the talk I'd heard that he's now open to moving abroad. I wonder if he's a lot like me. Like, I will either live in Leeds or literally anywhere else in the world.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he's the same with London.
There's a few places I could see.
West Ham hadn't signed Traore.
Yeah, if he was going to play in England, given the form of, like, some of their wingers, I wouldn't rule out Newcastle. Because I don't think he's going to start really, but I think he'd be a decent squad option there. He doesn't strike me as a go-to-Saudi guy. If he was going to do that, I think it would have happened 18 months ago.
Yeah, he's 31.
Yeah.
That's it. He's still got a few years in him. Fair play to it. Like, I went through the numbers on a couple of accounts, and essentially, including the payout and everything, he will have cost Chelsea in the region of £141 million.
Mm.
Which, again, if you ever wonder how PSR works, or, you know, doesn't.
Yeah.
I think they said he would have been due between 20 and 25 million if he'd have seen out his contract for the last 18 months. So he's probably have to give him
at least half of that.
Yeah, so probably in the region to 10 to 12. If you get paid that, I'm not entirely sure what the incentive, unless you really want to do it, what the incentive is to join another team, to move house. I'm sure if there's something in his mind that says, you know what, I want to have one last go.
Yeah.
He
probably doesn't want this to be everyone, as much so, he probably doesn't want this to be everyone's ending memory of Sterling, given how good a footballer he was. And as he's 31, probably still can be.
QPR.
I mean, that's the romantic story, isn't it?
After
he got nicked by Liverpool when he was like 15. Not nicked, they did actually buy him and like agree a transfer fee.
Yeah.
It wasn't the tribunal job, I don't think, if I remember rightly.
But yeah, I think it's someone higher up the pecking order than us. Yeah. I think he'd be one of those I'd be quite interested to see him go abroad.
Yeah.
Because I think there are plenty of... he's on a free transfer. Spanish clubs love a free transfer.
Do you know who loves a free transfer even more than Spanish clubs?
Or is it PSG?
No, Juventus.
Oh.
Juventus love a free agent above the age of 30 on massive wages. It's like their thing. It's almost, when they redesigned the club crest, they were going to have it at the bottom. It's like a picture of Aaron Ramsey. that I wouldn't be surprised at all. Even though that's not a position they particularly need, they love that sort of thing.
Yeah.
The funniest option is Spurs. Because then Chelsea have paid someone to go to Spurs.
Yeah.
So that's very funny. I don't think he's an MLS guy either, because I think that would have happened a year ago as well, if it was.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. He's not played for about a year. Like, he went to Arsenal, and then about halfway through the season, they went, no, this doesn't work.
Yeah.
You go sit over there, Raheem.
I do. I suppose the one thing with him is, like, we'll just tell you for 1 second. If for some reason he was like, fuck it, yeah, I'll come on 60 grand a week or whatever, something reasonable, would you take him?
I'd have to think about it.
Yeah, because I'm like...
there is objectively a good footballer in there. Now,
there's a guy who's won just about everything there is to win.
Yeah. And runs with a fantastic style.
I'd quite like us to sign him just to see my dad. Because my dad doesn't hate him or anything. You just can't stop noticing how he runs.
I
like seeing that in a Leeds shirt would be funny.
I mean, he does basically play the same position as Noah Okafor, which is also a position that we don't use about half the time at the moment. So it wouldn't make the most amount of sense if we were going to, like you say, if it was reasonable wages like that, sure. Mm. For what we need now for this season, it wouldn't really make a lot of sense. It would also be an absolute death knell for Willy Nonta.
Yeah, well, that's another topic. I still don't know why he isn't getting more football. Michael has just put within the comments that it is worth bringing up just because it's odd. Ivan Toney, it is odd that he was like definitely going on loan somewhere to try and get in the World Cup squad. Like, no one knew where, but he was definitely going somewhere, and it all seems to have gone really quiet, which makes me think he's just not going anywhere now and staying in Saudi.
Yeah, it was all.
I'll tell you what, if he was available on loan till the end of the season, I absolutely would take, because it's a loan, and if it doesn't work, you're not on the hook afterwards.
Him playing off Calvert-Lewin. Yes, please.
Him playing both of them would be good, and it does mean that you've got an actual really good lead the line centre forward with a load of Premier League experience who's a good finisher who can play either if Calvert-Lewin needs a rest or if he does get injured, which might happen. Again, I don't think it'll happen, but it is weird that that's gone quiet everywhere.
The talk that he was back in London.
Yeah, and he was getting linked quite a bit with Spurs at one point, but it was like, he was being shipped out everywhere. I think maybe his agent was like, no, you need to go play back in Europe somewhere if you want to make this World Cup squad. And then maybe the Saudi club want someone to pay all of his wages to do it. And it's like 400 grand a week or something, so people just aren't going to do it.
Yeah. It's that thing. I mean, I think he was one of the players that I had much less issue with going out to Saudi, but
yeah, he didn't get to the top level until he was 26, 27.
Yeah.
Go, that is a, yeah, go get your money. I understand.
But yeah, I think it can be difficult in these circumstances. I mean, clearly when someone wants to make a deal happen, it will. Obviously, like, the first one I can, off the top of my head at the moment, is Cancelo going back to Barcelona.
I believe it's Consuelo.
Consuelo. but, yeah, it would be interesting to know what sort of, you know, percentage of the wages the Saudi clubs are wanting.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if they especially need one now, but Newcastle would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, they.
I don't know if he's at one of the PIF owned clubs.
I believe he is.
Yeah, there you go. Suppose. Although, sorry, those two things are not at all related. The PIF and Newcastle. That it was stated.
Yeah, the thing with that is, for most of the season, it's made sense. But now Wissa's fit. They do actually have two centre forwards, but something like that could happen. I was just sorry, my phone just went a bit weird. I basically went on to check if, because I went, oh, it's Thursday. Farke will have had his press conference, but it's been delayed to 3 p.m.
Oh, okay.
So that's why I was just sitting down. So unfortunately, we're not going to have any team news for Arsenal at home on Saturday, which I'm still going to say, how the fuck is this a 3 o'clock game? All the ones that the fuck about moving, and Arsenal is still at 3 o'clock.
Yeah,
I'm at a stag do on Saturday, and I was like, oh, well, that game's going to move, so this will make it easy. I mean, I suppose if I'd have moved it to R5, that would have been worse. So,
yeah.
Small mercies. It's from the things that you hear, Goodmanson probably still won't be fit. And if he's touch and go, they should leave it and try and have him fit for, like, Forest.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's it's a much more important game. As we said, I think West Ham have got Chelsea, so your hope is that Chelsea can actually do the decent thing and win.
Yeah, I mean, they are obviously not to be trusted, but...
No, but... Yeah, the hope is that if they do that, then brilliant. Whatever else happens to us, if they get beaten, grand. We can all sort of stay where we were.
I hadn't realised that on the Sunday there is what is now legit a bit of a relegation 6-point of Forest Palace.
Ooh.
And then Sunderland Burnley on the Monday night. We don't really need to get into loads of detail about Arsenal because everyone knows. Like,
it's quite boring.
Well, I mean, they are just a really, really, really good side with quality in every position, with backup quality in every position. And it used to be, but you can rough them up a bit. And they've got a little bit of a soft centre. And they do still, I mean, haven't they like not won in the last four in the league? I mean, I think that. I mean, they won 3-2 against Kairat Almaty, didn't they, last night?
But yeah.
Their form hasn't been great, but they're certainly not a soft touch anymore. And I suppose they're the opposite. They're the best set-piece team in the league. And I know we've got a lot better at defending set-pieces, but they terrify me.
Yeah. Like, even when, you know, it's mostly been... So Gabriel and Saliba, hasn't it?
I mean, Gabriel and Saliba are the best. I mean, are they just the best partnership in the league? Probably.
Now that I'm thinking about it, I think so, because even kind of the top teams you go through and you're looking at a lot of players that are out of form or no real outstanding partnership. So, yeah, it probably is.
Yeah, they just have strength throughout the team. I mean, Raya is a really good goalkeeper. He does have, when he does make drop a bollock, it tends to be a big one, but it doesn't happen very often, and he's a great player. I'm going to say that there'll be Timber, Saliba, Gabriel, and then probably Hincapié. I'd have to check what they who they picked, because I know they'll have rotated a few last night. But, you know, they could play Lewis Skelly at left back. He'd be good. They could play Ben White at right back instead of Timber. And that means that they can play Timber left back if they want to. They've also got that Mosquera, haven't they, as well, who's pretty good. Midfield three, probably Rice, Zubimendi, Ødegaard.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, Ødegaard is, when he's on, he's as good a creative midfielder as you're going to have anywhere. Declan Rice, or as I believe he's meant to be called, the Irish Anton Stack. I think that's what they call him. Basically, he's every single facet of the game, he's brilliant. He's an all-round, just great midfielder, as good as anyone. Zubimendi is sort of a keep-it-ticking-over player. You won't notice him as much, but he's good. And then probably Trossard left, Saka right, and then who do you think they'll pick out of Jesus and Gyökeres? I believe they picked Gyökeres in the Champions League, so I'm thinking probably Jesus.
Yeah, it's an interesting one with them, because I know they started Jesus against Scum, didn't they? But you'd have to say neither one of them is. I know Jesus is top on the return from injury.
Yeah.
And the strange thing is that they are the second highest goal scorers in the league, and yet their highest goal scorer has 5.
Yeah, they very much spread the goals out, don't they? Oh, and that's the other thing. I don't think he's going to start, but I did forget. Kai Havertz came back from injury and started in the Champions League on Wednesday and scored. I don't think they'll throw him in to start this one, but he's another great option to have, either playing at the front or even playing a bit deeper.
I don't know if you saw this fantastic stat that's coming out as of yesterday, but Kai Havertz being the first person to play against a team who has the same first 3 letters as his name.
I do know.
As he does since Lee Dixon against Leeds in 1996.
Yeah. And I think it was somehow not Johnny Cooper, even though it seems like a Johnny Cooper thing to say. I don't think it was him. It was...
Yeah. But absolutely fantastic for something that no one needs to know, but absolutely everyone should know that.
Yeah.
It's the thing with Arsenal. They've been... Obviously, the signing of Gyökeres was, I think, the idea that, no, we are going to have an out-and-out number 9. We are going to have a proper centre-forward to lead the line. Because I think they've struggled the last couple of years trying to figure out between Jesus and Havertz as having someone play up there.
Yeah.
And whether it's just, you know, again, whether it's just taking Gyökeres a bit of time to get used to the Premier League. And again, my thinking is, if you can be that good in the Championship, you should be fine in the Premier League. But
he hasn't quite got going in the way that people expected, has he?
No. But again, I think he had a knock that had him out for a little bit as well. And doesn't Mikel Arteta let you know about injuries?
Yeah, well, he lets everyone know about everything because you can't not see him at the bottom of the screen because he's nowhere near his technical area at all times.
Yeah.
It's weird because obviously Arsenal have been on what has been described as that bit of a bad run lately. And I would have said the same. That defeat to Scum on the 25th of January was their first loss since the 6th of December. And since then, they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. They'd won 10 of 12 in that gap.
Yeah,
it's just that the two draws were the two previous Premier League games. But 0-0, because it was 0-0 v Liverpool, 0-0 at Forest, and then losing 3-2 to Scum. So they haven't won in three. They haven't won in three in the league, which is, oh my God, they're out of form. They're trying to throw the title away. It's very much how the other half live.
Don't worry. The other team in the Premier League who are massively out of form, Man City, are still only 4 points behind them.
Yeah. They're just a good side. They're just a good side in all areas. And I think we are far more equipped to go against them than we were when we played them, what was it, like second game at season?
I think our manager is far more equipped to deal with Arsenal than he was going into that game.
Yeah. Obviously, the hilarious thing to do is, of course, to pick Joe Peru on his own up top for this game. Just to prove you haven't learned anything.
Just taps his head going, they'll never see it coming. They won't have prepared for this. I mean, one of the things I think when we watched that game, it was one of those moments I was watching Ilya Gruev going, I don't think you're long for the Premier League. And I am now up to the point where I'm like, you are a perfectly reasonable backup player for the Premier League. Which I'm quite glad about.
Because we're playing Arsenal, I think he's probably getting picked.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, because obviously, I think whichever way we play it, it's going to be a very difficult game. If you go the 3-4-3, do you see someone like Okafor really getting that many chances to have a run?
Unless Goodmanson is back, I think this is completely unchanged. Biel's not going to be back.
Yeah, Biel was a few weeks, wasn't he?
Yeah. I think that this is sort of roughly 3-5-2, but I think the two is Calvert-Lewin and Aronson, so that it can be 5-4-1 if required.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best way for them to go. I think you're very much putting them in a position to not have to play their way up the pitch, which was the problem last time.
We decided
with our championship knowledge, going, look, we're just going to pass around Arsenal, get it to Joel Peru in the penalty area, and he'll finish it. It's fine.
We barely made it to the halfway line in that game, did we? Still nearly went 1-0 up from that strike from a corner, but...
Yeah, it was very much an attack versus defence performance was that one. But yeah, I think certainly we're coming into this one with a lot more nous about ourselves than we were for that one. I still think there's obviously going to be periods of time we go without really touching the ball.
Yeah.
Because you have an entire back line who is all quite willing to step up. Like I say, big threat at set pieces.
Yeah, the biggest threat. Set pieces are unbelievable.
Because we think, we think we're quite good, and we are. I think we're in the top four or five in the division for goals from set pieces. But Arsenal have got it down to an incredibly boring art.
Yeah, and I mean, it was going to be Diallo, but regardless of which keeper you pick, I don't particularly fancy any of them in there. Let's stick five people right in front of the goalkeeper and swing it in under the crossbar that they do. It's a struggle for any goalkeeper, and I don't think ours are particularly suited to it.
You know who always dealt well with players in the penalty area? Is it Ilan Meslier?
Yeah, he loves this sort of thing, doesn't he? If Meslier was playing, I'd be asking if any bookies will take bets on specifically a Meslier own goal where he punches it into his own net.
Yeah.
It's the sort of thing he really wouldn't suit. I think it is going to be, because I don't think Goodmanson's going to be fit, and I think if it's touch and go, they'll save him for Forest. So yeah, Diallo, back three of Roden, Bornau, Strauch, Boglund, James Justin, wing-backs, Ampadu and Gruev sitting with Stack, who's probably got a bit more licence, Aronson off Calvert-Lewin.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I can see the argument for Longstaff for Gruev.
Yeah, again, if he'd played a bit more in the build-up to it, I'd think about it. I don't think this is the game for him to be starting his first, you know, his first start back from injury.
Yeah. I think that, I wouldn't mind seeing the 3-4-3 and playing Aronson and Buonanotte and having them buzz around like fuck, pressing. Because they do, but I just don't think that's going to happen. And then you probably would have to change it after an hour anyway, because they'd both be knackered. But with them being, they're always a back four, so I can't see any world where he plays two out and out strikers.
No, although Bielsa would.
Yeah.
Damn it, we nearly went this whole thing.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember who it was who was asking me about it and said the first half was Bielsa. And I did sit. I'll sit there for a second. No, let's not call the first half of Everton Bielsa. It was good. It was its own thing.
Yeah. Now, is there any? I mean, obviously their players are great. Who are you most scared of?
Bizarrely, at this point, and I think it's I think most good teams sort of develop one after a while, and it's Leandro Trossard, who I don't think is in the top five players in their team, but.
You just fancy him.
He's just a really good player who's consistently good. And we'll just, you know, I know his hair makes him look like he's 45 years old, but I think he's one of those players that when he's on it, a team's on it.
Yeah, I've just got up the team against Kyrat. Like, it was Kepa in goal, White, Mosquera, Calafiori, Lewis, Skelly. So, yeah, I think we've just rotated the whole back four. So it'll be the one that we were saying. Havertz played in midfield. but he's probably not going to start. Norgaard, Eze, up front, Gyökeres with Madueke and Martinelli either side. So I think we've got the team right, because it's all the ones that didn't start that one.
Yeah, and I mean, if you just look at the players in their squad who can play where Trossard does, ultimately, Saka starts at every game. He is just, you know, the best player in that role. But when you go through the likes of Martinelli, Madueke, Eze, and I think technically, I would certainly say as a winger, as a wide player, I would probably put Eze above him. But Trossard just has this high level of consistency about him. That I think those three players just don't have.
Yeah. Mine is Saka. One is brilliant. Two, he always seems to do well against us.
Yeah, if we don't smash it across the field to him this time, I think we'll be fine.
And I do wonder if I do wonder if, as good as James Justin's been, if he's playing against Saka, that's going to be a really tough test for him. And then Gabriel and Saliba, and it's not because of how good they are defensively. It's especially Gabriel on set pieces. I think our best chance of scoring is a set piece, but I think their best chance of scoring is a set piece.
Yeah, I think the one good thing is, I'm probably comparing this to Liverpool, where obviously you looked at any long ball to Calvert-Lewin, and if it was in the vicinity of Virgil van Dijk, you just knew van Dijk was going to win it. I don't have that. Like, I think Calvert-Lewin will be a lot more competitive against those two. But they're so well organized. I think even the second balls are going to be difficult to pick up on at times.
Yeah, well, Zubimendi tends to drop quite deep, and he's quite good at picking, even though he's not massive, he's quite good at picking up them second balls and just playing a simple pass and getting them out.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he did, and he's had his massive screw up of passing last week.
Yeah.
Could do with him doing that again. Magnus Wiggins about here that Forrest got a 0-0 with Arsenal at Forest by sitting deep and frustrating and counter-attacking, and they did. And they were probably value for that point as well. They did miss that. I think Arsenal missed one absolute sitter, but other than that, like they probably were decent value for it. And I think that we can defend as well as Forest, probably. I don't think we've quite got the same level of quality for counter-attacking. And I think Forest, it's just specifically the type of wingers they have are really good for it. And because we're wing-backs rather than wingers, I think it's going to be harder for us to do it than for them.
Yeah, like I'm just going to have a quick look now. So whereas you're looking at Forest, where it's, you know, someone like Hudson-Odoi that's out there.
I mean, even the ones that didn't play, because we've got like Hudson-Odoi, Amari Hutchinson, that back were. They've got those sorts of players. Although I do think we've got a better centre forward for this sort of situation.
Yeah, like you say, it's just the hope that we don't get dragged into that situation where Brendan Aaronson has to fill in deeper, and it just leaves Calvert-Lewin isolated.
Yeah. I was going to say, surely two big men to battle the centre-backs is more likely to bear fruit and get us out. I think that we might see that at some point, but I'd be amazed if Farka starts like that. It just doesn't seem the sort. I would not be at all against it. If he went 5-3-2 and picked the two big lads, the main reason I don't think he will is because I don't think he'll want to play Brendan Aaronson as a centre-mid. And he's not dropping Brendan Aaronson.
No, and
we always used to say he's not dropping Brendan Aaronson because it was funny, and but now it's because he's been about his best player for the last month and a half, too.
Yeah, like you say, I think there are certain, and I think there are certainly games where I'd quite like us to go with two centre forwards with Aaronson playing just behind them, you know, as that narrow 3-4-3. And you just get your width from your wing backs, but again, I can't see this being a game where it'd imply that.
No, I don't. And the other argument for it, of course, is that if they're so good at set pieces, it gets an extra big lad for defending them.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. But yeah, I'd say if he did it, I will see. But I mean, I've got to be honest, I'm not confident.
No, it's very hard to be. Like I say, I'm not a massive fan of Arsenal. I find them. I find it it's to a level crushed the creativity of the talented players you have in that team. Like I know you still get generally high level of play from them, but I would much rather be watching Saka from 4 years ago.
Yeah, we haven't I haven't heard from Benny yet because he'll be at work. But Alex is going for a one-all draw, just like he did against Everton. Both him and him and little Danny both got maximum points for one-all. We both got some because we had nil-nil and 2-all respectively. So I believe so. Alex is very much in the lead of the predictions. He's gone one-all again. Connie messaged me saying, Head 1-0 Arsenal, nicking it late. Heart 1-0 Leeds, so 1-0 Leeds it is. Little Danny has us getting beat 4-1. I have us getting beat 2-0.
I have us losing 2-1.
Cool. I say I will put Benny's in when I hear back, probably later on. Obviously, desperately want to get some, and at home, I don't rule it out. At home, now that we're playing with a back three, I don't rule it out that we're getting something. But I think it's unlikely. The Friday night game against Forest next week, that's the one that you need to. You don't like have to win, but if you win that, you're in a really good position.
Yeah, just like you say, that if there's players who you're 50-50 on fitness wise, save them for that one.
Yeah, and that's why I could see Goodmanson being on the bench for this. If
Because
he's
we need another defender.
if he's close, but yeah, if it's risky, I won't bother trying it. But yeah, that will do us for episode 345 of Mighty Whites podcast. We'll be back probably. I'm not sure what I'm working, but Monday might work for both of us, I think.
Yeah, I can probably make
Next
it
week,
work.
so yeah, maybe then. We'll see if. We'll see what happens timing wise. There'll either be one and then a preview for because we might end up with two separate ones in the unlikely event that Leeds actually do something right at the end of the transfer window.
Huh.
I don't think that's going to happen, but there is a chance. So there's a chance that there might be two next week, but it'll probably be just one. That will do us. I've been Jack. See you
I'm in KC. Have a good one.
in a bit.